Barcelona has removed one of its local bus routes from Google Maps. Bus 116 here in Barcelona was never meant to take people across town. It's a neighborhood bus that connects the Gràcia area with the neighborhood around Parc Güell, one of Barcelona's biggest tourist attractions. And it's been eliminated from Google Maps in order to make the route more useful for residents. Previously, it had been so full of tourists visiting Parc Güell that the locals often couldn't get on. City Hall apparently won't confirm that they requested the removal of Bus 116 from Google and Apple Maps, but according to The Guardian out in the UK, a spokesperson from Google says they'd only remove a bus route if the government requested it. The official website for Transports Metropolitans de Barcelona still has information about Route 116, but Google Maps, as of now, instead suggests getting to Parc Güell with a couple of cross-town bus routes or walking from the metro stop Lesseps. And apparently it works. The local activist, interviewed in the Guardian article, says it's so far been very effective in getting tourists to stop using Bus 116. Come to think of it, I was in Rome about a year ago, and a small local train to the beach was conspicuously absent from Google Maps. I read about it on some blogs, and it turned out to be a fast, easy, and cheap way to get to the beach. But maybe the Roman city council, Senatus Populus, Que Romanus, etc., had done the same thing and requested its removal from the map. Generally, I think this is barely even a story. Barcelona's struggle to remain livable in spite of mass tourism is now entering its fourth decade. The city was originally put on the map by the 92 Olympics, so it's been quite a while. And there's not much else to say about Bus 116, I guess. But it got me thinking about how Google Maps has changed travel, and that does seem worth talking about. Hey everybody, it's Daniel. Welcome back to Spain to Go, the best podcast in the entire multiverse for all things Spain. I'd like to give a shout out to Nancy, who has financially supported the podcast very generously. Nancy and Glenn, apparently. Nancy says that they appreciate my eye for Spain. They come here once a year, and specifically my comment about steakhouses saved them last time they were in Barcelona. I think what I said about steakhouses is that Argentinians tended to open up reasonably priced steak restaurants in the most random of places, and it's great because if you are in the most random of places, you can often find a good steak for a good price, which is awesome. Thank you, in any case, Nancy and Glenn, for listening and for your generous contribution. You can also contribute. If you go to expatmadrid.com/donate, there's a page where you can donate some money and also send me a message about what you would like to hear about on future episodes of the podcast. This is episode 71, and it's about Google Maps and the changing of travel because of all of these smartphone apps that we use. I vaguely remember traveling before everyone had smartphones. It was different. My first trips around the USA and Mexico were with Lonely Planet guides in my backpack. Guidebooks, you know, books. I'd look at the maps, read descriptions, and pick destinations based on the guide. I would go to hostels and restaurants based on what was in the guide also. $2 signs meant it was cheap, $3 signs meant it was more expensive. A short blurb and the price was all I had to go by. Later, here in Spain, I also did a bit of traveling before Google Maps. You'd make a hotel reservation through some primitive website, take a train to an unfamiliar city, walk outside the train station, and ask a total stranger for directions. Weird. I even remember the days when if you wanted to take your crush off to Oporto, for example, in Portugal, for the weekend, you had to call a bus station and ask for schedules. not too user-friendly if your level of Spanish wasn't amazing, and mine wasn't. The trip with my crush to Porto was, not fruitful, let us say. Anyway, it was a less than perfect system, but we didn't know. We were just doing things the way they'd always be done. Now, everything is easier. You don't need to spend any time being lost in a new city. Just hop on Google Maps and it'll tell you how far it is to your hotel. Of course, you've booked the hotel with Booking.com after first reading some reviews and comparing it to every other place in town. Dropping your bags off, you realize it's time for lunch, so you get back on Google Maps and look for places nearby. There's much less exploring or guesswork when you do it this way. Search for Thai food, find something rated 4.7 stars, get directions for the 7-minute walk, and you're good to go. What did people who wanted Thai food even do before this? Walk around and hope? Consult the yellow pages and then a map of the city? I remember what I probably would have done. Wander around hungry, looking in the doors of various restaurants as I walked by, wait until something appeals to me. Very hit or miss. Is everybody traveling with the help of a lot of apps these days? I'm not really sure. I'm completely dependent on them. My wife Morena is even more extreme. She spends lots of time looking at restaurants before we've even reached the city, so she knows where she wants to go in advance. She's also looked at pictures of food, so she knows what she wants to order. Some people use TripAdvisor or presumably Yelp or something to find out which restaurants and sites are worth visiting. I tend to use Google Maps just because I'm already on it for transport and walking routes, and Google will just tell me about other places along the way. However, there is, of course, a problem with basing your life on restaurant reviews or restaurant critics, because Google also has a system of reviews that help you decide whether something is worth doing or not. This is somewhat unfair to the restaurants, I guess. A place has been there for 100 years, you go to have coffee one morning, the waiter is slow, and you give it 2 stars. It's not exactly rigorous restaurant criticism. Then again, I don't read restaurant critics, and I don't care what El Comidista says about anything at all, ever. El Comidista is a big deal here in Spain. He used to make random Chinese restaurants in Usera in the south of Madrid into famous culinary hotspots with just a stroke of his keyboard. I'm just saying I never paid attention. I'd only hear about it from others. I do, on the other hand, trust random strangers to give their honest opinions. This is a personal bias, and I admit it. The critics in any field may be telling you what they think you should like based on snobbishness or hipsterism or other factors that have nothing to do with your or my personal enjoyment. I first discovered this back when I was a teenager with music criticism. I would read Spin magazine, I would read the rave reviews of some band, I would go out and spend $16 on an album, and I would come home and find that I didn't like the music at all. I suspect that music critics have different criteria than your average horny broke teenager for what is good music, and with restaurants, it's the same. So, I don't trust restaurant critics. Google Maps, on the other hand, has some guy named Ramon who says that the croquetas were soggy and the service was subpar, and I tend to believe Ramon. Having said that, it's all wildly subjective. There's a bar here in Barcelona that has a 1-star review from me just because the waiter pissed me off. I was studying for the Spanish nationality test, so I'd bought a copy of the Constitution. The Spanish Constitution of 1978 is long enough to be printed as a small paperback book. Afterwards, I went to this bar up in Gracia. I was waiting for Morena, and I started reading. And in a minute, the waiter came up and said, "Ah, I see you enjoy reading science fiction." He was dressed like a typical Catalan leftist. It's a vibe, don't ask. And thought this was a pretty funny joke. I disagreed. So, 1 star for them. In all honesty, I knew I was on risky ground. I had half expected to be mocked or insulted by the bookseller for asking if she had copies of the Spanish Constitution here in Catalonia, but the bookseller was fine. She took my $7 and moved on with her life. In any case, I was aware that I was flirting with controversy by appearing in public with such an obvious symbol of Spanishness. On the other hand, after 20 years living in Spain, getting Spanish nationality is a big step up in my life, and being judged by Catalan independence types does not bring me joy. All this to say, Google reviews are subject to all the regular human foibles, and that's okay. Is your dog urinating on 2-star dirt? It's possible, because you can rate almost anything on Google Maps. Geographical features, 1,000-year-old architectural marvels, anything. You can go to the Serengeti in Tanzania and leave a review if you want. Hot and buggy, too many zebras, 2 stars. From Google, I learned that the supermarket I shop at almost daily has 4.2 stars, whereas the dog park outside my window, the Pipi Kan in local parlance, has 4.5 stars. The place next to the Klot neighborhood market where I buy industrial-sized tubs of yogurt has 4.2. My butcher has 4.8 stars, which she fully deserves. She's great. The parking area for motorcycles around the corner has 5 stars, but it's only 1 review, unfortunately. You can see where I'm going with this. If everything is up for criticism and everyone empowered to be a critic, who knows what could happen? There are plenty of stories about people walking into restaurants and demanding free stuff in exchange for not leaving a bad review. I've even seen reports of scammers putting up fake negative reviews, then demanding money to take them down. But back to how Google Maps has changed travel. I suppose travel used to be more adventurous a few decades ago. You showed up somewhere with little idea of what you were going to get, and you had to improvise. It also used to be much less mainstream. My trips across the US by Greyhound bus were considered pretty eccentric back in the early 2000s. And going to Mexico just for the hell of it? I mean, everyone knew Mexico was down there, but you weren't actually supposed to go there. Since then, the internet has made it a lot easier to plan in advance, get opinions from previous travelers, look at pictures, watch videos, listen to podcasts, even, about people going about their lives in faraway places. And all of this has made travel quite a bit less scary for your average person. On the other hand, cities and whole countries now have to deal with the consequences of mass tourism. I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. I just know that we're very often wrong as a species about where massive trends are going to take us in the long term. Remember when people thought that Twitter and Facebook were going to create a peaceful global village in which everyone was happily connected via the wonders of social media? It seems stupid in hindsight, but I thought that. I think a lot of people did. So, apps are making travel easier and more people are doing it. Does travel still expand your horizons, or was it the adventure and uncertainty that did that? Is this global village going to be peaceful, or just have people at each other's throats in creative new ways? Only time will tell. I guess one day we'll look back and the answer will seem clear. For now, I'm off to buy some 4.2 star yogurt. That's about all I've got for today. I hope you enjoyed this short episode. I do think that travel can expand a person's horizons. What the actual consequences of expanded horizons are is less clear to me. I've been to India a couple of times now because, you know, my wife Morena is from India, and India certainly changes your ideas of what's going on in the world. At least it did for me. You should definitely head out there if you get a chance. I don't know. I mean, it's not for everyone. Lonely Planet guidebooks are still around. I don't know if you listened to the episode a few weeks ago Madrid Off the Beaten Path with Felicity Hughes. It was episode 68, and she is just putting the finishing touches on Madrid's new guidebook. They've apparently changed the emphasis of these guidebooks since I was using Lonely Planet books, 20 years ago to travel around. In a way, I assume that even back then, Lonely Planet and other guides could make or break businesses based on including or not including them in the book. Long after all of this, I ended up writing for Lonely Planet for their online, section about Madrid. And I remember going into these businesses and saying, hey, I'm from Lonely Planet. And the way some of them would get real excited about the whole prospect. This was around 2015 maybe, and I guess I thought guidebooks were already pretty obsolete, but this was for a Lonely Planet blog, I guess, and who knows. In any case, it's definitely a factor and has been a factor for a while in which businesses prosper and which don't. Michelin guides, I don't know if this is something people talk about in the US all the time, but here in Spain, if you get Michelin stars on your restaurant, that's a whole thing. It's a very high-level restaurant criticism thing, but interestingly, the Michelin guides were just made by Michelin, the tire company, in France, many decades ago. They wanted to encourage people to drive further, wear out the tires on their car, so they started publishing these guides. The guides, of course, are, now a huge deal in their own right, but originally it was just, drive four towns over to this restaurant, it's great, and eventually you'll be buying new tires because you're spending all this time driving around. Just another example of how marketing trends end up changing the world in weird ways. So once again, I hope you enjoyed this. Thanks to Nancy and Glenn, our sponsors of the week. I have another sponsor this week, Alex, actually. Thank you, Alex, as well, for sponsoring the podcast. I appreciate everyone who is listening and sponsoring. Seeing positive reviews for the podcast also helps me to inspire myself to make new podcasts. So if you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, leave me some stars. Leave me a review if possible. I appreciate it. The blog is expatmadrid.com, and you can go there to donate as well. There's a donate button in the upper right-hand corner. You may be listening to this on YouTube. There are also a bunch of videos I've made about Spanish on YouTube. Same channel, Learn Spanish with Daniel. If you just look for Learn Spanish with Daniel in the YouTube search, you should find me. I'm the ginger guy with the beard who is teaching Spanish verbs, Spanish, pronouns and prepositions and all of that. I try to make it as easy and simple as possible for English speakers to understand without getting super bored, because I remember learning Spanish in a super boring way and I don't want to make anybody go through that. So Learn Spanish with Daniel, that's also free, it's up on YouTube. You could, go to Amazon and buy some of my books. Look for Daniel Welsch, W-E-L-S-C-H. If you're listening to this, you probably don't need to learn English, but that's the topic of my books. This is my serious online persona who educates people who want to learn English. If you love Spain, you may have someone in your life who speaks Spanish and wants to learn more English, so the books are always there. You can check those out. And nothing else for today. I hope you enjoy this upcoming summer of travels with or without Google Maps. And hasta la próxima. Bye.